You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're still watching the Batman vs. Superman trailer. It's another Danielless week here in the midside. Find out who's joining me right now. First, via Skype, from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. How are you, Elliot?
The red capes are coming! The red capes are coming!
Wasn't very good delivery. Eisenberg's delivery on that is questionable as is, and then you just did even worse with that.
Well, you know, what you gonna do? What you gonna do?
Trust in the casting is what I'm going to do. Trust in Zack Snyder is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I think it's just, I think that line's going to be better paced in the movie overall than it is in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the one thing I have a problem with in that trailer, and you had to highlight it. Thanks.
I picked it on purpose in a way. Like, I wonder how he feels about this. So, just picked it.
I like the content of the line. I'm just not sure about the delivery, but like I said, I think they tried to pick a line to make Lex Luthor look intelligent and sort of demonic and scary, and I just don't think it plays outside of context in the trailer. That's all. Also joining us via Skype from a hotel room in Orange County, Katrina. How are you, Katrina?
I'm happy to be here, representing all women, since that's what it means when there's only one female on your show.
Well, yeah, so now we have a gay and we have a woman today, and you guys are representing a whole oppressed class today.
Yeah, we're not individuals at all. These aren't our own viewpoints. These are collective viewpoints of the classes to which we belong. So,
well, if that were true, it would be a lot easier to get along with gays these days, with Elliot saying, let them bake cakes for whoever they want. Do you have any controversial stances similar to that, where you disagree with the large majority of women?
Oh, one or two. I think they'll come across.
I think they might come across in the first news story. So let's get to it. It's time for the news without Daniel T. Richards.
Former Reddit CEO says the site's about to be purged. Yijin Wang, former Reddit chief executive, current irrelevant douchebag, posted on the site Wednesday to deride last week's successful ousting of CEO Ellen Pao, promising Redditors that, contrary to every known fact, Pao was a behind-the-scenes champion of free speech at Reddit, and that her replacement, founder Steve Huffman, will soon implement a purge of hate subreddits. Wang will mad at the Redditors, who accumulated over 200,000 signatures calling for Pao's resignation, saying that Reddit was never meant to be a bastion of free speech. According to Long, the white power, racist, sexist neckbeards just screwed themselves over because only with a feminist hero like CEO Pao could the site continue to host the sort of vile content we neckbeards adore. Wang, unfortunately, did not mention what alternate dimension he visited where Pao is, quote, literally Silicon Valley's number one feminist hero.
Well,
so you guys didn't
she...
talk about Pao last week, even though you take material from Reddit, and it was the biggest news on the internet. So I'm glad we got it in here this week.
Honestly, I just kind of poach off of Reddit. I don't really think Reddit's that big of a deal. I think Reddit's one of those things that, on the internet, sort of like Twitter, hypes itself even though it's not really that big of a deal. What does Reddit really do? Explain it to me.
Reddit gives people a community, really. I mean, that's what it's about. It's you can streamline the content, so it's not like the comment section on, you know, news sites or sites that have all kinds of information coming together. People, you know, build identities and exchange ideas, and some people do silly things and some people do bad things, but you know, that's also like the real world, and you know, that's safer than 4chan. So
are you defending Reddit? Are you a Redditor? Is that what you're saying?
I am a Redditor. I am I am a Redditor, and I am very proud of the one time the internet mob actually achieved justice in ousting Powell. So I think Wong is an idiot. Of course, I also think the people who are going to be running Reddit now probably are also some other kinds of idiots, but there was a brief moment of victory, so.
A brief moment of victory where things weren't going to be censored? Is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, we were never, doesn't seem like we were ever going to actually be able to stop the censorship, but, you know, I see so many petitions for people wanting to just do stupid things and unfair things and things that don't make any sense, and for to see for once a petition that had the right ideas behind it and for that to succeed, that was pretty exciting. Even though Reddit claims and Powell claims her resignation has nothing to do with the Reddit revolt, it still was nice.
I think that Reddit is really just a symptom of a much bigger problem in the culture in so many ways. So I think you should celebrate the victory, as brief as it might be. But man, it's just another front in a war that's just raging everywhere. This idea that speech has to be policed, that people can't say what they want to say for fear of offending, the idea that offending someone has become the great sin, the great evil that nobody, you know, that we have to work against. That's the mentality behind this. And I think this is the new, this is a small victory, granted, but it is a victory. We should celebrate it.
I mean, I thought that was the point of Reddit. That's always been my perception of Reddit, is it's to offend other people. You post something on there and then everyone tries to say as many offensive things in the comments as possible. Am I wrong?
Of course.
It depends on the sub. I mean, Reddit, every sub is a different community. It's moderated by different people. And, you know, when someone wants to sort of grab attention, if Gawker or BuzzFeed or someone like that wants to grab attention, they can always find some abysmal sub, like there are plenty that are anti-black, whatever you want to find. Certainly there are people trying to, you know, get illegal materials out there, like almost any website. But that's not the majority of the site. It's almost never on the front page. If it is, it's because sites like Gawker are drawing people's attention to it, which just makes it worse. On the contrary, there are subs where people actually do some really good work and some good, you know, conversations and discussions happen and people with good ideas get them out there. It's the same thing as YouTube, right? People think that YouTube has nothing to offer. They think the comments are accessible because they're reading the comments on cat videos, and what the heck is a person going to say on a cat video? But if you go find a video by a person with actual ideas who is trying to do something intelligent, then you're going to find similarly intelligent and engaging comments on the site. So, I mean, I think people just need to learn to filter the noise. But in the meantime, all of these sites are businesses, right? I mean, according to Reddit, they never wanted free speech in the first place. And that doesn't exactly surprise me. I mean, it seems kind of like, you know, all you have are 4chan or 8chan where you could potentially have real free speech. And even there, you don't necessarily. And I don't know. It's just, I wish that there was some site out there that would just be a platform and otherwise be hands off and, you know, monitor legal or, you know, eliminate, report, whatever you have to do with illegal content, of course. But other than that, not try to police people. But I don't know, the culture doesn't seem very accepting of that.
Isn't this, as Elliot was saying, and as I always say, just another example of how we don't know how to use the internet yet? This entire battle over Reddit with their CEO, who's supposed to be a real feminist hero or some bullshit, and this ex-CEO who's writing long rants and about how do we censor it or not, isn't this just because we don't know what to do with these sites yet, what their purposes are, what we should be doing with the internet?
Definitely. And the purpose of, you know, the board and the people running the site is not necessarily the same thing as the users, right? It's all part of the bigger picture of how the heck do we monetize social media? How do we build a site where the content is provided by the users and then turn that into money that generally means appealing to the mainstream, right? How do you get, I mean, you can look at the comments on any of these articles about this story, and it's a ton of people who are like, I've never been on Reddit, but it's good that they're cleaning it up. Or I've been on Reddit twice and I thought it was accessible. And it's like, okay, well, congratulations. You're clearly qualified to pick the CEO of Reddit having been on there twice, you know, or having heard something about it one time on BuzzFeed.
Right. And, you know, in that same sort of light, How is someone a feminist hero for running a site like Reddit? Like, I don't even understand how that even gets to that point. That's like these people who, these hashtag activists that, you know, Elliot always rants about. Elliot, how are you really, like, how is being on Twitter, how is being on Reddit make you some sort of social justice warrior? You're not really doing anything, are you?
No, I mean, it's good to do, I think, to get a voice out there. But Twitter particularly works best if you're doing other things. If you're somebody who, if you're a protester, an activist of some kind, you're going to rallies, you're going to marches, and you're tweeting photos from there, and you know, that kind of citizen journalism, I think, is really, really important, especially now as there's a lot of policing trying to take over the internet, and literal policing from the government in some ways, that want to regulate the
internet. Well, net neutrality will go there if we let it.
Absolutely. So more and more, I think that if you use things like Twitter, Instagram, in conjunction with what you're actually doing in reality, it could be an amazing tool. But I think a lot of people I think Ayn Rand referred to them as armchair philosophers. Wasn't that her quote?
Yes.
Where they just kind of, it's a lot of espousing of opinions, but it's not actually anything being done in reality. They think that they're doing something. And right. I think those are people you got to be very careful with.
Right, and not just those people you have to be careful with, but it's my favorite thing about this entire article is supposedly she's some sort of, this pal is some sort of feminist hero, and they're saying he actually, the CEO was saying she actually wanted to champion free speech. But if you look at anyone who actually is, you know, a leftist hero of some sort, they're not pro-freedom, they're anti-freedom, and this is the greatest trick they played. I watched an episode of this cartoon called Rick and Morty last night, and it's this thing where all the Ricks from all the parallel universes get together because they're being persecuted in all their different timelines, and they create a council of Ricks to protect themselves. And the main Rick of the show goes to them, so in order to get away from the government, you created a government. And to me, that's what leftists do. I mean, we're supposed to have this POW being this, you know, this advocate of free speech. But she just wants to create a different government that fits her views. And that's the issue. It's not, as Katrina was just saying about, you know, 4chan, I think you said 8chan, which I've never heard of in my life. Is there like a 16chan and a 32chan?
One day.
One day. When there's, that's how much freedom there is. It's 32 times chan freedom. But the thing about it is they just try to create a government that fits their views, even though they say they're anti-government. So saying she's some champion of free speech to me is the biggest joke of all.
Yeah, they have no shame about saying one thing and doing another, or saying one thing and being another. I mean, it's an interesting strategy. People become heroes that way on both sides of the political spectrum, you know, just sort of at some point someone asserts that you're this and everyone chimes in and agrees. And suddenly it's true, and it doesn't matter how many facts come up contrary to that. You know, that's the narrative, and people are repeating it, so it's going to stick.
It amazes me how many people fall for these word games. They've convinced people that even though they're anti-freedom, they're pro-freedom. And actually, these word games, I think, that plays perfectly into our next story, doesn't it?
Definitely, yeah. In these workout clothes, there are no sizes. Apparently, the hardest thing about working out is finding clothes that fit. And the hardest thing about finding clothes that fit is counting from 1 to 10. One company seeks to eliminate this confusion by abandoning the universal standard of numbered sizes in favor of flowers. That's right. At this Hey. You even knew it was coming.
Oh, you're saying why we laughed at it?
Yeah, you laughed. So hard.
Okay. It's ridiculous. You can. It's one ridiculous. Of those. Even if you know about it, it's still a punchline. Like if somebody came to me and they're like, "I'm wearing orchid," I'd be like, "You're an idiot."
Orchid. We picked the most vaginal flower too. I don't even know what that. Oh God. Okay. I'm gonna read that line again. One company seeks to eliminate this confusion by abandoning the universal standard of numbered sizes in favor of flowers. That's right, at the disturbingly named women's athletic wear company Manifesta, you can't order small, medium, large, and you can't squeeze yourself into a size 2. Sizes instead have names like Rose, Lily, Violet, etc. From the company's website, we don't want there to be an inherent order to the sizes, with women striving to fit into the smallest number possible. and we don't want women to feel bad for ordering a size that society has deemed unacceptable. We just want you to get what fits. So to find your size, use your measurements, not society's idea of what you should be.
Okay, the first thing I'm going to say is, at the top of this story, you said, and I don't know if this was a quote from the article or something, but the hardest part of working out is finding clothes that fit. Is that what you said?
That's a paraphrase of what they actually said in the article.
If the hardest thing about working out is picking your clothes, you're doing it wrong. Just want to put that out there. And the second thing is, this is one of the biggest fucking jokes we've ever talked about on this show. There's still a spectrum. They're just convincing you there isn't. They're still the skinniest. They're still the fattest. They've just renamed it. And all you've done is made it more difficult for yourselves, because now you have to learn the order and memorize the order of the flowers. Because what are you going to do if a rose doesn't fit? You know, if a 3 doesn't fit, you go up to a 4 or whatever. I don't know the female sizes for clothes. But you go up one. So you got to know the order of flowers too, so you're eventually going to figure it out if you're not a complete fucking buffoon.
Oh, the best part about it is, if you actually look at their size chart, right, there's no variation in how the measurements ascend. So the smallest size, which is willow, which I don't think is a flower, but anyway, and also kind of implies the size. The smallest size is, you know, the smallest bust, hip, and waist, whatever it is they measure. It's the smallest bracket. And then the next size up is, you know, the next range up. It's just addition going up all these sizes. So they made this big deal about how they are making sizes that are customized to you and giving them these names. And then they're exactly the same as all of their sizes. They're just labeled differently.
Right.
There's no difference at all. I mean, at least in a normal plus size store, they do have sort of, they're not named sizes, but they're named cuts, right? So if you're like a fat person who's like a round fat person, then you're an apple. So you buy sizes 14 to 22, but you would buy an apple cut.
You buy some
or whatever.
Apple bottom jeans? Is that what you buy? Apple bottom jeans?
Something like that. And then if, you know, there's hair shapes, and there's like, I think they call it goddess for like, you know, big but like curvy, and so you get that name, which makes sense because what else are you going to call it? You can't really rank those ordinally, but then within that you still have a size, and it's just about the ratio. The ratio is the same. This is all assuming that as people get bigger, their proportions stay exactly the same, that all people's proportions are the same. And that's the real problem with finding a size, not knowing what your number is, you know. And any site, any company that offers clothes that puts a numbered size on them also has a size chart that shows these measurements. So it's like nothing has been changed except not calling it a number, except making it slightly harder for you to like shop for sizes because we have to call you a flower. And by the way, the bigger flower is Dahlia, which is definitely a fat flower. I mean, I love Dahlias, but they're definitely the biggest flower on their list. So I don't even
think what you're saying is black women buy the Dahlia because of the black Dahlia. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that at all.
I love Dahlias. I think they're beautiful.
I buy them all the time, but they are the fat one.
You know, when I heard this, I'm like, my first initial response was to say, oh my God, this is such a chick thing. It's something that only people would do. And then I remember that
that's
live
coming
in
from the gay guy too, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, it reminded me though that we live in an era where men wear lacy lingerie. Literally.
Like, wait, we do?
Hey, Elliot, I don't want to know what goes on in your bedroom adventures.
Please, do you think I could afford lace? I don't think so. No, but it's just funny because my first initial response was like, oh my God, this is really just lame. But then I'm like, well, no, actually it's not the lamest thing out there. We have dudes that are showing up in bras and panties made of lace.
Showing up to where?
Yeah, where are these men, Elliot? Where are these men? Tell us.
You haven't read those articles? There's lingerie for men now. In fact, I think one of the people talking about it was on Reddit. No, there's lingerie that's like lacy, silky lingerie for men to wear. Not even kidding. You're like, it is out there. Google it. It's out there.
Eddie Izzard must be very happy.
Yeah.
His life just got a lot easier.
Your objection to this phenomenon, Elliot?
No, it's not an objection. It's just funny to me. I mean, but I think you guys raise good points about the difficulties and the importance of keeping a number. It's just really another way to evade reality. You know, I'm struggling with my weight and I'm working towards losing weight and I make progress little by little by little. It's very, very difficult to do. Having those numbers, you know, having things like sizes and stuff, which are not the same necessarily for men and women. They're different weight measurements, but the measurement is important because that is my way of measuring where I'm going and where I am in this process. So for me, to read something like this, I kind of see it a little bit as detrimental in a way. If you're trying to lose weight, those numbers are a very, very good way to help you do that, because saying apple or orange or lily or lilac or whatever you want to name it, it's, to me, that doesn't really do much in terms of me establishing a goal and seeing where I'm at, because there's a lot more to weight loss than just pounds. I mean, there's inches in your chest and your waist. And I think this is a little, it might be a little detrimental for people who really are trying to lose weight.
But your flawed premise there, Elliot, is trying to improve your life. We don't do that in modern day America. We're supposed to have everything acceptance. And this is part of the fat acceptance movement is ultimately what it is. And this is my question about this kind of stuff. And this is sort of similar to what's going on Reddit, where I'm asking, what does Reddit really do? Have we as a society sort of moved beyond making actual progress in favor of mentally tricking ourselves? So, you know, Reddit, where we're trying to trick ourselves, we're doing freedom speech versus social justice. And that's how we're improving the product of Reddit. And this company here is, the way it's improving the quality of their product is they're creating this flour scale rather than a number scale to make people feel less fat. So that's the way they're improving their product, where, you know, capitalism is supposed to be best product in the marketplace wins, or what people deem as the best wins. Or are we now improving ourselves mentally? Because I feel like that's what the social justice warriors would say, that we've improved ourselves materialistically. Now we're going towards the mental improvement. Is this a mental improvement, or as you're saying, Elliot, is it so detrimental just because it's an evasion of reality?
There can't be improvement mentally without a tie to reality. And numbers, measurement, things like that is a very, very good way to see where you are and to objectively determine where you are, where you need to be or want to be so you can be healthy. And within, I mean, because when we talk about acceptability in terms of sizes and in terms of weight, it's not about acceptability by society. It should mean acceptability to you and to your health with regards to your life and to the best possible life that you want to have and that you want to live. So it really should come down to, are you happy at this weight? And if you're not, what do you need to do to change it? Where are you and where do you need to go? So it can't be, I don't know that it can be better mentally when you don't have a reference to reality. Do you know what I mean?
I agree. So we're just making ourselves worse in the name of getting better. That's what's going on? Are we all just crazy?
Speaking of crazy people, Clinton-appointed judge overrules professionals, orders additional psychological counseling for Dinesh D'Souza. Conservative author and filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza has been ordered by U.S. District Judge Richard Berman to continue psychological counseling, contrary to the recommendations of two court-appointed psychologists. Judge Berman said he's just trying to help the poor guy by undermining his credibility and inhibiting his political efforts. Just kidding. What he didn't say was that he often requires counseling when he finds the motives of the offender hard to understand. What did D'Souza do that was so baffling? Why, he ran afoul of campaign finance laws by about $20,000. $20,000 that just happened to support a Republican Senate campaign against Zidra. In addition to counseling, Judge Berman ordered an additional 4 years of community service, which in D'Souza's case means teaching English to naturalization applicants. So agree with us or you're crazy, basically.
This is one of the scariest stories we've ever covered in the Midside, and I say that understanding the full weight of those words. The idea that a judge can just say, you're crazy, therefore this is what's going to happen, when the professionals are saying otherwise, is demonstrating how much power the legal system has in this country, how much power judges have in this country. I mean, we just saw you know, a few weeks ago, a month ago, when we were on our little bit of break there, the way the Supreme Court basically just started legislating for the country with Obamacare and gay marriage. And now this guy, this judge is basically, you know, legislating as well. Now he's decided that judges can decide who's crazy and who's not. And there was actually a similar story to this that, you know, even though it's sort of on our side, that something happened. Did you guys see the story of the kids who were forced to go to juvenile detention because they wouldn't visit with their father? And it was because the judge thought the mother was crazy and that the father deserved visitation rights. Now, yeah. You know, as sort of like, you know, we advocate men's rights on this podcast, that you would think that we would be in favor of that because it's like, hey, look at the judge standing up for the man. But that's not the judge's job to decide who's crazy and who's not.
Well, in family court, that is exactly the judge's job. I mean, the principle behind family court is different than other courts.
So that was a legit ruling that the judge did there?
Well, I don't know. I don't like.
I think
I like a lot about family court, but I don't know what the answer is there.
Okay.
But in D'Souza's case, I mean, all campaign finance laws are, to begin with, are violations of free speech. And beyond that, this sort of petty reaction to a minor violation when we know so many other violations going on for people who matter more, right, who aren't being prosecuted. It's a good example of the real danger of these laws is the way that you can pick and choose how to apply them.
Elliot, were you trying to say something?
Well, I was going to say that I think the issue, I mean, the big problem with this is the idea that if you have alternative points of view to somebody, that you could be labeled as being mentally ill. I just tweeted a story that turned out to be a parody, but it yielded a really lot of scary responses on Twitter. I tweeted a story that came from Nerd News, which is a parody site, about the American Psychological Association saying that determining that belief in God is a mental illness. And it turned out to be a parody, but a lot of the responses that I got were government officials were sending surveys to churches and synagogues asking questions about anxiety and mental health and depression coming from the government, not from, you know, any psychiatrist or from any medical institution. It's a very scary thing when you consider the implications legally, considering any contract, any license that you have could be called into question. Gun ownership, you know, if you are a Second Amendment advocate and you want to get a concealed carry permit, that could thwart that if you're found to be mentally ill because you are Christian, because you're atheist, because you're Jewish, because you're an objectivist, because you're a capitalist, because you're libertarian, whatever. Anybody else can deem to be a sign of mental illness is now subjective. And this is a really scary trend. And I'm not a Dinesh D'Souza fan by any means, but this is something that I think is really scary. And when you're an advocate of liberty, like we are here in the Mid-Site, we find ourselves having to stand beside people that we would never stand beside in any other circumstance. But this is one area where I think we kind of have to stand with them.
Well, yeah, they've been after D'Souza really badly ever since his documentary about Obama, right?
Right.
Because, you know, remember what his documentary revealed? It revealed Obama's real philosophy. So this is sort of the first time we've really seen someone in sort of the mainstream. And he's sort of, I guess, an offshoot of the mainstream, so maybe mainstream is a bad word to use. But someone out there in the media, in the public, and who's worked in government and been involved in these committees actually tried to have a discussion of what the president's beliefs are, what any politician's real beliefs are. And what he found out was that Obama was ultimately anti-American, not because he, quote-unquote, hates America, but because he favors the idea of egalitarianism and, on a global scale, the redistribution of freedom and wealth. And they've been after him ever since he revealed that, because if you look at the way Obama approaches the country, that's what he does. He's trying to be quote-unquote just by leveling the playing field. So they think he's crazy because he stands against that belief and he exposed it. And this is just an offshoot of that. And that's the scariest thing to me. This is an agenda-driven thing.
Yeah, it's like the deal with Iran that just happened this past week. I mean, the idea that he's going to allow Iran, an enemy of the United States, to start pursuing and building and developing nuclear facilities, you know, enriched uranium, you know, while promising that they're not going to make nukes, wink, wink, you know, while at the same time kind of turning, you know, giving the bird to Israel. I mean, in his mind, they are equivalent to each other. Israel and Iran, you know, they're morally equivalent to one another. And you can't come to that conclusion unless you're an egalitarian and you drop the context of what the, of each country, of the morality of each country.
We're talking about egalitarianism as equality of outcome here, which is the real issue, right? I mean,
yeah, we're talking about the way Daniel always rants about egalitarianism on here, right? You said his outcome, right? We're not talking about equality of opportunity. We're talking about equality of outcome. That's one of the basic dichotomies of political discussion in this country that people don't understand. If we're going to talk about egalitarian this week too, I think it's important to talk about the Emmy nominations. We do that next in TV with JML. The 2015 Emmy nominations were released this week, and the media went crazy because finally we supposedly have a diverse year in the nominations, and finally the quote-unquote black actors are getting their due. That's sort of a sub-point for me, but that's where everything's going. That's where all the news story is going and everything. But for me, the story here is, I don't think any of the stuff that was nominated is that interesting or that good. I think we see a direction that television is going in, and I don't know if maybe it's just a down year for television, but here are some of the big nominees. So I'll just run these down real quick. For Outstanding Drama Series, the nominees are Better Call Saul, which, if you remember, I reviewed on this podcast and was like, it's just Breaking Bad again. Downton Abbey, as I like to call it. Game of Thrones. Homeland. House of Cards, Mad Men, Orange is the New Black. Comedy series, we have Louie, Modern Family, Parks and Recreation, Silicon Valley, Transparent, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and Veep. And then for lead actor in a drama, there's Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul. He plays Saul. Kyle Chandler from Bloodline. Kevin Spacey from House of Cards. John Hamm from Mad Men. Jeff Daniels, The Newsroom, Liev Schreiber, Ray Donovan, and lead actress, this is where we start to get into the you know, diversity that they're talking about. For Empire, it's Tahari P. Henson. For Homeland, it's Claire Danes. For How to Get Away with Murder, it's Viola Davis. For Orphan Black, it's Tatiana Maslany. For Mad Men, it's Elizabeth Moss. And for House of Cards, it's Robin Wright. And I won't keep going through all of these, but that's the basic idea. And then for writing, there's, you know, Mad Men's nominated a couple times, that kind of stuff. So what are your guys, just tell me your biggest reactions to looking over the nominees list.
Do the Emmys matter? That was my first question, these things.
Well, it's a good barometer to see where the people in the industry are, where their heads are at, and what they think is good. Do they ultimately matter? No, they don't ultimately matter in the same way the Oscars don't ultimately matter, but the Oscars give us a good barometer of where the people in the industry think art is at, and what they think is good at.
It's just the same shows, almost the same as last year. Like, they're identical. It's just boring. None of these shows that are nominated for drama or comedy are shows that I watch. None of them.
Well, they're not procedurals.
Well, screw you. You know I do not like procedurals, except maybe one or two.
I've worn you down, though. Now you're admitting it's one or two. Well, what show would you like to see on the drama list or on the comedy list that you watch?
Well, for drama, I would like to see something along the line. I would love to see, like, I would say like something like Daredevil, for example. I thought Daredevil was extraordinary.
I'm glad you brought that up, because to me, that is the biggest missing thing from this entire nomination thing. Daredevil was nominated for one category. Do you know what it was?
What?
Best opening title sequence. And the opening title sequence for Daredevil is good, but shouldn't it be in other places on here? And why do you think it isn't?
Because there's always going to be a bias against superhero shows. I think that there are some episodes of Arrow, for example, or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that were really well written that could have gotten a nomination or two, but they just didn't. They don't, I mean, there's just that bias there.
You, Katrina, do you think Daredevil isn't nominated because it's a superhero show?
I don't know. I was going to ask, though, why. So when they have a show, is it for the most recent season, or are you looking at the show holistically?
No, it's the most recent season. So they submit episodes from the season.
Right. In that case, House of Cards being on here and Daredevil not is total insanity.
Right.
Right? I mean, everyone agreed that House of Cards had a terrible season. I understand nominating it the last 2 years, but this year, what are you doing? And, you know, Daredevil, despite my lackluster reaction to it, I mean, it was integrated. It was at least as well executed as House of Cards, and it had a lot of the sort of dark, edgy, like you said before, Wire-esque elements that I would think would appeal to, you know, people who like shows like Game of Thrones and House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. So I the only thing I can think of, yeah, is superhero, or maybe, I don't know, maybe not wanting to give Marvel anything.
I can think of something. Isn't it because it's romantic? If you look at all of these shows, there are heavy elements of naturalism in them. The one that's the most romantic is House of Cards, and even that's very naturalistic. So isn't it that Daredevil's too romantic? It's similar to The Wire, but The Wire is naturalism to the extreme, so it takes sort of the tone of The Wire and sort of the grittiness and sort of the dealing with the, you know, the criminal underbelly of the Wire and how that affects the city it's in, but then it doesn't in a romantic way. I mean, there were the two main characters are romanticized essentials of the two opposing views of how to deal with the quote-unquote evils of capitalism and the evils of the one percenters. And I don't agree with that philosophy, but that's what the show is. It's a romantic portrayal of that, and that's what makes it so good. So that's why I think Daredevil's not on here.
I'm surprised that your show, Hannibal, I would have thought that it would have gotten something.
No, because ultimately it's romanticism. I mean, that's sort of why I was surprised Hannibal gained so much momentum all around the time it was canceled, that people were saying, oh, this is a great show. But that was a major victory because of the sub-community that was created around it. I mean, where's the Hannibal subreddit? Is there a Hannibal subreddit? This is the thing that something like Reddit needs to exist for, is to promote things like that. It wasn't the general culture promoting that. It was a specific group of people that Brian Fuller was whipping into a fervor.
I think the Hannibal subreddit might be about actual cannibalism, so I wouldn't go there.
So I have one thing I'm going to say about this list of nominations.
I'm sorry. I looked it up. Our Hannibal is a real thing. The Office of the Brilliant Psychiatrist and Legendary Serial Killer Hannibal Lecter, M.D.
Do they talk about cannibalism?
There's Hannibal TV, our Hannibal TV.
There you go.
And the headline is #Save Hannibal.
All right, there we go. Thank you, Reddit. I appreciate you doing something good. So you've been redeemed in my eyes, Reddit. And then when we get to Reddit on Reddit, you'll be unredeemed, but we'll get to that in a little bit. First of all, though, There's one thing I want to say before we move on from this list of Emmy nominations. So, there's a series I watch, and every week I watch it, I say, this guy deserves to win an Emmy. And he's actually nominated. And it fits with their whole diversity agenda. So, if Andre Brower does not win Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series for his role as Captain Holt in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the Emmys are dead for me forever. I'm going to take Katrina's stance where I say the Emmys don't matter at all. Because like I said, it fits the agenda, and his performance is absolute brilliance. If you are not watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine just for his performance, it's incredible. I just watch it every week and I'm like, wow, this is why I want to watch television.
I find it interesting. The only nomination from Big Bang Theory is Mayim Bialik.
Good.
And Farrah Fowler. That's a little surprising. I remember, I mean, just last year, year before, it was such a zeitgeist, you know, of Big Bang Theory. And now all of a sudden, it's just getting one. I think maybe there's another one. Yeah, Christine Baranski. I think those are the only two nominations for it. I don't see it anywhere else.
They're like the Beatles. They got too big. No one cares.
Yeah, it sort of jumped the shark in the culture because not in the general culture, but in the Emmy culture because it got too popular. So I mean, yeah, because usually Jim Parsons gets a nomination just for being Jim Parsons, but apparently they moved beyond that. Peter Dinklage got nominated again though for Best Supporting Actor, which seems kind of strange. He seems like a leading actor, but whatever. Lena Headey, doesn't she have an L in her name? I think that's misspelled. Lena Headey for Game of Thrones, Emilia Clarke for Game of Thrones. So there's some talented people in here. But like I said, Andre Brower, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So let's move on to television that could be good in the future. We have an article here from Vox that says Comic-Con's best and worst television trailers. So I just want to touch on these, a few of these for a couple minutes. So we'll just go from the top. I picked out four. We already talked about the Walking Dead trailers last week. But let's just talk about some of these TV trailers. The first one is Ash versus the Evil Dead, or Ash versus Evil Dead. It doesn't say the word the. What do you guys think of this? What did you think of the trailer? Do you think the show is a good idea? Will you be watching?
I'll be watching.
I think Bruce Campbell is adorable, so I will definitely be watching.
What's adorable?
Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell is adorable. I agree.
He's so adorable.
Did the show look good, though, but beyond the fact that it's just Bruce Campbell? Why will you guys be watching?
Yeah, because Bruce Campbell. Because whatever it is, I know he can pull it off, you know.
Elliot, is it just Bruce Campbell for you, too?
Well, part, yeah, but also, I mean, I grew up with, you know, Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness. I mean, it's just kind of part of my childhood. So I'd probably watch it just because... just to kind of see where they continue the story.
All right. Then I guess it's confession time for me. So I do like Sam Raimi a lot. I like, you know, I think his first Spider-Man movie is still one of the best superhero movies ever. You know, I really liked Drag Me to Hell. I liked Oz the Great and Powerful. I think he's a great filmmaker. I think he's a romanticist. I really like what he does. But I went back and I tried to watch the Evil Dead franchise and I hated the first movie. It was awful. Now, I know it was made in, you know, 1981, so it's really low budget and everything. But when they got to the part where the tree was raping the woman, I was like, I can't deal with this. I skipped Evil Dead 2, and then I tried to watch Army of Darkness, and I just didn't find it that funny. I found it sort of more insipid than anything. So I found this trailer a lot funnier than I ever found Army of Darkness. And maybe it's an issue of time period. And it's just difficult to go back and watch it outside of its time period. And now that this is being updated for a modern time period, it's easier to deal with. Did you guys find the humor to be the same as in Army of Darkness and Evil Dead 2? Or is this updated a little bit?
I thought the humor was turned up like to 11 in this trailer.
So they're taking they're taking it even further than Army of Darkness, you're saying?
Right. I mean, Army of Darkness was not primarily... I mean, I know it is funny, but it's not, like, laugh out loud funny. But I think you... I mean, you obviously couldn't do Army of Darkness today, right? I mean, not to beat on the old conservative drum, I guess, but we're too desensitized. And you could see just in the trailer how extreme the violence was. And when you add to that the fact that part of the fun is terrible special effects in these movies, you kind of have to do something else.
All right, so maybe this is what I was always looking for when people gave me the impression that Army of Darkness is like horror comedy. Because that's what I thought Army of Darkness was going to be. Like, I thought it was mainly going to be focused on Campbell and his quippiness and him being like a tongue-in-cheek superhero. So I guess that's the direction the show is going to go in. So it sounds like I'll probably like the show more than I liked the movies.
Probably.
All right. So let's move on to a show none of us are going to like. Heroes Reborn. And I say it that way because it's just going to bore us again, just like the first one. But I actually only got about halfway through this trailer. So I watched the beginning where they were like, where are the heroes? Where are the heroes? And I was like, who watches the Watchmen? And then they got to the point where they're starting talking about that stupid company that the cheerleader's dad works for and everything and the conspiracy behind it and everything. And I found myself not caring. The most interesting thing to me about this trailer is that Zachary Levi is in this. It was sort of like, he's like this nerd actor who looks for nerd parts, and this was the biggest one he could find. So what did you guys think of this trailer for Heroes Reborn?
I didn't think of it.
did you just Howard Rourke it?
Basically. Just, I never watched the original series. I don't give a crap about, you know, their rebirth.
Katrina?
I can't imagine anyone does. Yeah, so maybe I missed something. I only watched the first two seasons, I think, of the show, or maybe one and a half seasons, because it just... Heroes was, like, the most disappointing show I think I've ever experienced. I mean, it looked like it was going to be so good. It was before we had superhero stuff coming out of our ears. So for me, it was very exciting as a comic book nerd to see something and to see this kind of original material and to have it be on TV every week. And then it was awful. I mean, just the greatest example of how important writing is, because everything else was good. Production value was good. Casting was good. But if you don't have the basic part down right, your story, then it's a mess, and I see nothing. In fact, there's strong evidence that this is going to be worse, right? I mean, the part of the problem in Heroes was, you know, they kind of created these characters and then didn't really do the right things with them. You have these stupid immortal cheerleader character who's just, like, crying all the time because she can't die. Like, that's so upsetting to her. But, oh, my God, I'm free. I can't die. Well, just stop sitting your hand and, like, dish. Just whatever, and you'll be fine. Like, just go about your life. No one can know the difference.
What high school cheerleader wouldn't be excited to be the center of attention forever?
Yeah, then there's that part too. Right? And then you look at this preview, and it's like, look, it's her dad. The one not powered person is him and the scientist from the first one, right? Where they seem to be the kind of centerpiece of the trailer. And I'm like, okay, so the one thing that's interesting about your show is the fact that people have powers, and you took that away. That, and if you sat all the way through the trailer, I kind of got the impression it might be environmentalist thing. It ends with this image of something that might be a hole in the ozone layer and some Eskimo-looking chick, but who's blonde, maybe she's from Iceland or something, saying...
So is that how the heroes are going to save us?
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading a little into it. Maybe it's a tear in the universe, maybe it's something else, maybe something more interesting. Oh, wait, it's Heroes. It won't be. So, yeah. Looks like it could be even worse than the original.
I mean, I could talk about this more, and I could talk about comparisons to other shows and everything, but I don't think Heroes deserves that much of a conversation. I will say, though, that I had the same experience you did, where I was super excited when the show came out. It was at the height of Lost, when Lost was super popular and super good, and it was like a Lost-type show, and like you said, the casting's tremendous, the production value's tremendous, the marketing was tremendous. And then I watched it, and the first couple episodes were so poorly written. I mean, I'll always remember the Asian guy who could time travel. Like, he time travels
Hero.
To Hero, in the show Heroes. Time travels, and he finds a dead body with a gun next to it. So what does he do? He picks up the gun. It's like, of the basic things that even morons know not to do, that's one of them. And then I stopped watching it, and then later on I picked it up again. To, you know, because they were doing like a marathon or something for the first season. And I was like, well, this is really popular. I want to see what it is. And I got to the episode where they reveal the senator's wife's disability. And it was literally the same exact reveal from the end of Walkabout, the fourth episode of Lost, where they show that Locke is in a wheelchair. So I literally believe that the writer of the show just rips other people off. That's why there's no depth to it or anything. He's not creating his own story. So let's move on, because I don't want to give this any more time than
I have to. Well, a reboot supports that theory, right?
Right, because he hasn't moved on with his life, even though the show died miserably and there's not really a reason to watch it anymore. He's just trying to live off of...
Let things die. Just let them die.
If Daniel was here, he would be ranting about how Hollywood needs originality, correct?
Yeah. So ranting about Firefly. Like, let it die!
Well, we'll get to Firefly.
But at least new ones.
So, let's move on to something original then. One of my favorite showrunners, Carlton Cuse, is reuniting with my favorite actor from Lost, Josh Holloway. This is probably partially because Carlton Cuse's favorite character on Lost was portrayed by Josh Holloway, Sawyer. And it's sort of a tragedy that Josh Holloway hasn't been doing anything since Lost. They tried to give him that show Intelligence, which I liked him in it, but the rest of the show wasn't very good. You know, Eldon Hansen from it has since moved on to Daredevil. So some of the people are doing good things in it since then. And hopefully Colony will be that for Josh Holloway, and hopefully it'll be another hit series for Carlton Cuse, who's done Bates Motel and The Return and The Strain, all very good shows that I enjoy very much. So I have high hopes for this series. What did you guys think of this trailer, Colony?
It looks interesting, but I just think that it's this particular story has just kind of been done already, you know? It's almost at the point of a trope. But I'm interested to see what Carlton Cuse does with it. I love Josh Holloway. I especially love him with shorter hair. I mean, I remember being surprised seeing him in the fourth Mission Impossible movie when he had that short hair and that swagger and woof, he was just dreamy. So I'm looking forward to seeing him in this movie, in this show. We'll see what happens. We'll see what they do.
So what Elliot's talking about is the premise of this is there's an alien invasion and Josh Holloway, it's an alien occupation really. And Josh Holloway's son with Laurie from The Walking Dead was captured at some point in the original occupation or something like that. And he tries to escape the city to go find the son, but he gets captured. So then they try to turn him into a collaborator, basically an informant. So the conflict of the show is he going to collaborate with the aliens in order to get his son back, or is he going to remain loyal to the humans? And then to me, there was an interesting thing at the end of the trailer. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but one of the other humans said to him, have you even seen the aliens? So maybe it's not even really an alien thing. Maybe it's this alien conspiracy was dreamed up for some humans to grab power. So this could be a lot more interesting than it seems.
Well, it would be if they hadn't revealed all of that in the trailer.
Oh, you think that's going to be the big reveal of the series and they spoiled it? Or is it just...
I mean, maybe...
Is this one of those times where we're too smart for the trailer?
I think that I'm too smart for most trailers, maybe, or I'm too old. There was a time when even the premise of a movie was kept secret, right? I remember watching the preview that they did for The Bishop's Wife, which was the original movie that was called The Preacher's Wife when they remade it, and... In the trailer, they wouldn't even reveal that Cary Grant plays an angel, even though in the first 5 minutes of the movie, you find that out. And that was too far, right? But now I think this trailer was a good example of how we've gone too far the other way. It was like, okay, how much of the premise of the movie, how much of the pilot episode do you need to show me in this trailer, right? I wish they hadn't told me that he actually went. I wish they had just told me the conflict that he wants to go find his son. And, you know, that supposedly there's an alien invasion and you could have dropped in some hints that there are some people who are skeptical of that and leave it at that instead of showing his escape, then showing his capture, then showing his return, then revealing. I mean, it was just like, did I just watch the first like 5 episodes of this show?
It did feel a little bit it felt a little bit like the first episode of a web series.
The worst thing about it though is that if they're revealing that much, and if they don't spread it over episodes, then it might be jam-packed into the pilot. And a pilot that's overloaded like that, generally speaking, doesn't lead to a very stable series the rest of the season.
Well, I'm going to have a little bit of faith here and just take the foot off the gas here for a second, pump the brakes here for a second on you guys. Carlton Cuse knows how to pace a story, so I'm not too worried about that. I think the issue is more the marketing team and them getting a hold of this. And is the marketing team, is this a result of there are just so many series out there that they think they have to show all of the plot to get people to watch? That this is the way they think they have to hook people? Because there's so much television out there. You can't watch everything. I mean, even doing a segment where we cover it and, you know, I like to write about it often, I can't watch everything. And I pride myself on knowing what's out there and being knowledgeable about what's out there. So is this just an effect of the marketing team saying, how do we get people to watch amongst all this competition?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think a lot of people want to know exactly what they're going to get, and then they want to get what they were promised. And, you know, you have to have some basis on which to make decisions. And in your case, you know a lot about who runs shows, who the good writers are, so you know, whom you should give a chance to. But someone who's a more casual viewer of television probably is just like, oh, I like anti-government stories. I like conspiracy stories. I like alien stories. So tell me it's that and then I'll watch it. But you can't have something with, you know, a slow build to a secret twist. I mean, not a lot of shows have gotten away with that, right? I mean, Lost is the best example of a show that somehow managed to hook people without telling them anything. But it's
the magic box theory. It's J.J. Abrams' magic box theory.
Well, I think
those are your two options. You tell them nothing or you tell them everything.
Well, the idea, I mean, Lost also, from the pilot, It had a big cast, so there were a lot of different stories that could appeal to a lot of different people, which is probably what they were trying to accomplish with the trailer. You have, you know, for somebody who likes character drama, character development, family stuff, you have the drama with his family, him trying to find the son. For the sci-fi, you know, crowd, they have the aspect of the potential aliens or non-aliens, you know, and I think the problem with trailers like this is that in their attempt to try to appeal to everybody, I don't know that they're really going to draw in that many people. So I agree with Katrina. I think sometimes it's just better to pace things out slowly and not really give away so much of the premise and let people come to you rather than try to drag people in.
And again, this is an issue of the marketing. It's not the show itself. Because what you're describing, Elliot, when you're talking about the family drama plus the aliens, is something Carlton Cuse said he learned from Lost. He said he never used to meld his drama with these sort of more far-fetched premises. And far-fetched is my word, not his word, before Lost. But he really learned with Lost there's an advantage to doing that. So I think he became a better romantic writer when he realized that you could exaggerate certain elements of the drama by having these more fictional premises in there. If you look at, you know, Bates Motel, The Return, The Strain, it all couches these intensely personal dramas in these sort of almost over-the-top farcical premises. So basically the solution to not knowing what to watch and not having a good barometer is to listen to the midside and pay attention to what I have to say, because I will tell you what's worth watching and what's not. And, you know, if ultimately your taste doesn't fall in line with mine, that's fine, but you know exactly where I stand. So if you like naturalistic stuff, just listen to what I say is romantic and don't watch it. And listen to what I say is naturalistic and watch it. And then, of course, I'll laugh at you. So speaking of shows that are probably going to end up being naturalistic and also fit Katrina's demand for a shorter trailer that doesn't give things away, Outcast by Robert Kirkman. Kirkman is, of course, the creator of The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead. And now he has a show on Cinemax called Outcast, which seems to be about exorcism. What did you guys think of that trailer?
The silence speaks for itself.
I'm just not a fan of horror, and there's been such a big push to get horror on television, and I'm sick of it. I don't need another horror show.
I don't know. I just found it silly.
Alright, I mean, the thing that stuck out to me is it seems to be done, I mean, it looked like it was even shot in the same style as The Walking Dead. So again, you have this premise, and it seems like he's sucking all the air out of it to doing the opposite direction of what you were saying, Katrina, where he just slows it down so much, and it just makes it all about, you know, not the actual premise itself. There's no balance between plot and character here. It becomes all about characters and their emotional reaction. And that's what I mean by naturalistic. It's sort of, these are the premises that determine your life. Now let's watch your life. And that's what it seemed to be doing in this trailer. Because it's all about a guy who is trying to figure out why he's possessed. And rather than, you know, making that some sort of thematic thing about good versus evil, it's just sort of like, what does this guy in this ridiculous situation do? Let's watch.
Well, I mean, it's that drawn out, like, faded color palette and then the presentational framing of the camera and these... I don't know. It's just the same. You know, there are a million shows and million films that use these techniques, and they're just in the, even the, like the opening chords of the trailer, that little piano, you know, ding.
Oh God, you're right.
It's just, I'm sick of it. We've seen it a million times, you know? I mean, and horror, I mean, you can do, I think that it's possible to do really brilliant horror. You were talking about Hannibal. I think Hannibal's a prime example of how you can do horror in a really brilliant and a very romantic way where you're reflect, where the plot and the theme are well integrated, where you're actually learning something about human beings and human nature and not just kind of watching things unfold rather haphazardly, you know? Or I just don't see that with this show. It's too derivative.
All right. Speaking of things that are derivative, it's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way, EA blows, Steam rocks, God rest for my firefox. See, these things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. We're going to do a couple controversial things here in a second. Controversial with our audience, I think, more than anyone. But first, let's do a sort of a desensitized Reddit. So, first Reddit. What is your go-to random fact? Do either of you have a go-to random fact?
And I feel like Little Boy Jerry Maguire, where we just kind of spout things out.
Yeah, well, that's the direction I was going to go in it. So I'll go first then. I don't really have a go-to random fact, but I know people who do, and it's just sort of like, why are you telling me this? And what it is in conversation, it's something you tell people in order to sort of, it's sort of like an icebreaker, I think. When you don't know what to say or other people don't know what to say, you talk about your random fact. But to me, it seems very impersonal. It seems like a poor way to converse. What do you guys think? Do you have a go-to random fact? Is that how you interpret this question?
Mine's usually having to do with like Broadway, like musical theater. Like who originated what role in what show, and you know, that's pretty much the extent of it. I don't really have a lot of random facts from other areas.
My sister is big on knowing random facts, and she actually has it on her resume. It's the last point is like, you know, interests or skills or whatever, and it says interesting facts. Ask me for one.
Jesus, are you fucking kidding me? I thought I was bad with putting Love, Zack Snyder movies on my resume.
No, I mean, I think it's cute. I mean, you know, she's not exactly the sort of straight-edge corporate type. So, you know, it reveals her personality. It gives her something fun to talk about. She's engaging when she talks about facts, so it doesn't come across as impersonal. Me, personally, I'm very self-centered, so I have a lot more stories about myself that I would rather use as an icebreaker. I definitely have in reserve, but, I do have facts, you know, especially if it's someone I've known for a while and I don't want to bore them with another story that I may have accidentally told them before. I really like infectious diseases, so I know quite a bit about particularly rabies and, Yersinia pestis, which is the Black Death. So I'll tend to bring that up, which, is sort of the perfect balance for me of, you know, interesting and off-putting, which is how I try to brand myself. So,
I think interesting a lot of times in our culture is off-putting, just because people don't know how to deal with it. But yeah. For me, I guess as a teacher and as a storyteller, it's hard for me to just say things randomly. Like I had a family trip recently, and we went to Monticello, and you know I have two cousins who one's 15 and the other was like 12. And we were in like the little museum house they have at the bottom of the hill before you go up and see the actual Monticello. And it's all stuff about Jefferson's history and things like that. And I just started talking to the kids about this stuff. And the 15-year-old, the girl was like, you know a lot of random things. And it didn't even occur to me that it would seem random. Because I'm very good at like if something comes up in class, I can make it related to what we were talking about, and I can use it as a teachable moment because my mind always tries to integrate things. So I guess that's why I have such a problem with the go-to random facts thing. It's sort of like, are we going to talk about things that actually have to do with things, or are we just going to say random shit? Because I can list off, like, you know, the whole 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever it is. I can do that with random actors, you know what I mean?
You can do 6 degrees of Tom Brady is what you can do.
Well, right. So, I mean, that's the thing. Do you want me to talk about, like, you know, Tom Brady's accomplishments or, like, random games he's played in or things like that? Like, that's, I guess that's why I just don't like the random fact thing. It just seems like, why are we so disintegrated?
Well, I think that's, you kind of hit on it, that it probably came across as random when it in fact wasn't, because people aren't used to thinking of things that way, right? I mean, so much of education is just memorizing random facts.
Right. I mean, these were kids too, right? I want to be clear about that. They were kids who they probably haven't, I mean, they're Canadian too, so their education system isn't too great. Sorry, Canadian cousins, but, they, you know, they're not used to thinking like that, and they're not used to seeing all those connections too. Because we're not going to lie here. I mean, we understand here in the Midside that we have a different perspective, right? A more integrated perspective, and we have a different understanding of things.
But the better you are at that, the more you can connect seemingly unrelated things, right? Which is always going to feel kind of like a random fact.
Yeah, that's true too. That's something my dad said, and I didn't understand until I got older. He told me, you know, once you understand the way the world works, you can't turn it off, and you just understand everything. And that's the thing, there are certain things that once I learned them, I was like, oh, things are starting to make a lot more sense now. I mean, the one that we talked about recently on the podcast that you showed me, Katrina, was that video on male disposability. Once I saw that, all this like random shit about the way the genders interact and all these fucking problems no longer were random to me. Like, that was the integrating fact.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next Reddit here. Are we ready? This one's ridiculous. Girlfriend doesn't like Firefly. Should I break up with her?
She should break up with you, certainly.
I had the same thought. I was like, because you asked this question, that proves that you probably don't deserve to be with her.
And I say this as someone who loves Firefly. I loved it. I mean, sorry, that's... I mean, unless, you know, if she comes at it from a perspective of like, I can't stand Firefly because I don't like, heroes and I don't believe in romanticism. I don't think that human beings can achieve things, you know, and then it's symptomatic of something much more fundamental.
Well, and the fact that, but even then, even if she could say it in that way, she's probably worth keeping around just because she at least is self-aware enough and educated enough to speak in those terms, you know?
I'd ditch her.
I'm on the opposite side of this. I vote yes.
What?
Thumbs down. Dump her, kick her off the show.
You're being provocative.
How do those dating shows work? No, I'm honestly not. That was my, so there's not a lot of data here, right? I mean, I'd like to know how long they were together, for instance. If they haven't been together very long, I think, you know, move on. And
can we reveal a little bit about your job? Can we tell them what you do? Cause you're doing your job right now. Do you realize that?
I'm a statistician, put it that way.
Right, that's what she does. So she assesses things like this. So that's what she's doing. She's looking at all the data to assess the best outcome. That's her job.
Right, and it's, you know, it is a cost-benefit analysis with relationships. I mean, I've seen a lot of people, not naming names, but I've seen a lot of people kind of wait and like, oh, let's see where it goes when bad things are piling up, you know, but none of them. A big enough deal because you'd feel like an asshole for dumping someone over Firefly, but honestly, if it's only been a little bit, you should. You know, I have a friend who, you know, third date with a girl, she said she liked house music, and he was just like, no, we're done. Like, you know, certain types of music are really important to him, and you know, it comes across as a little bit silly. If you posted it on Reddit, you'd probably sound like an asshole, but realistically, he made the right call. You know, we have a limited amount of time, and art is really revealing of, you know, what matters to you. And
if I,
you know,
only
person,
dated girls who listen to pop punk, I'd be in trouble.
So is that the most important art for you though?
Well, no, you're telling me if a woman hates Zack Snyder movies, I shouldn't date her?
Yeah, I will agree with that. You should not date her.
You should not. Yeah, if she hates them, absolutely you shouldn't. And that's another thing. I mean, with Firefly, it's not saying, you know, like the way it kind of seems like she didn't really like it. She was like bored by it. I mean, I don't know. I've had this experience with some art before. I mean, it's more devastating. Like, if I meet someone and somehow Atlas Shrugged comes up and they say, you know, they hate Atlas Shrugged, I can actually have a conversation with that person. And, you know, I'm never going to date them or anything, even if I weren't married. But, you know, I probably wouldn't go there, but I could be friends with them. If I talk to the same person and they're, you know, indifferent to it and they're just kind of like, oh, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things to me where it's like, you can't not have a reaction to this, you know, cause that's where it stands in my life. I'm like, you've got to pick a side, man. If you have an opinion on this, then you're pretty. And I think Firefly reasonably falls in that category for a lot of people. If you have a neutral reaction to that show, then there's probably something missing sense of life-wise that you're just not going to be able to pick up somewhere else.
So what about these people who will only date objectivists, who will only date other objectivists? Is that something you agree with? Because I personally have a problem with that. I think that's an issue. I think you're shutting yourself up to a large percentage of the population. You know, maybe like somebody shares your sense of life but isn't an objectivist.
But she says it's a cost-benefit analysis situation here. Well, of what value are they to you? What values do you share? And of those common values, how important are they? You know, I've dumped the guy before because he badmouthed Disney. I'm talking about not just the company, but the man, Walt Disney himself. And that's a non-negotiable for me because Disney means so much. It provides my livelihood. It has provided my childhood with so many wonderful memories. And Walt Disney's impression on this earth has been, I mean, it's inestimable. And anybody who's going to attack the brand and attack the man behind it, that's somebody I'm not going to date. Now, if I put that on Reddit, I'm going to be seen as an asshole, of course. But there is a reason. It's just like you not dating somebody that doesn't like Zack Snyder movies. We know you. We know what Zack Snyder means to you. And if somebody doesn't like Zack Snyder movies, that is going to be an issue with you because you hold him in such high esteem.
Well, the better example of this is, you know, I hadn't thought of it in the realm of Zack Snyder movies before, but I mean, I have thought of it in realm of the Patriots. Like, if anyone tells me the Patriots are a cheater or Tom Brady's an asshole, like, I can't even talk to them anymore. Or Bill Belichick's an asshole. I can't even talk to them anymore. I can't even be friends with them. I can't even, like, really be in the same room with them. So I definitely couldn't date someone who, you know, I literally couldn't ever date a Jets fan or date a Peyton Manning fan. Like, I couldn't do it. I'm not kidding.
And you think the guy who wants to break up over Firefly is silly.
All right. Fine. All right. God damn it.
I think Katrina swayed us over. I think she swayed us over to herself.
No, she did. And she's made it so I can never date anyone now. Because where am I going to find someone who's okay with Eminem, the Patriots, Zack Snyder movies, pop punk, objectivism?
Just pick one. Pick one and let the others kind of fall where they may. What of those?
Pick a couple.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as...
I just did name a couple.
Question, the objectivism question comes up a lot, and I think it depends on, you know, the individual. Like, one of my good friends has an objectivist-only rule, but she has, to me, a good reason for it, which is that she really wants to raise kids, and she feels very strongly about how they should be educated and how that should happen, and the attitude that you should have toward that, and she's also a philosophy student, or I don't know what to call it exactly. She doesn't professionally work as a philosopher, but her field is sort of intimately entwined with philosophy, so she knows a lot about it. And just to get the degree of admiration that she would want to have in the person who fathers her children, they would essentially have to be an objectivist. But being an objectivist is not enough, right? So there's that circumstance. And then there are the people who are kind of like more casual objectivists. And in that, you know, maybe like people don't like the term sense of life objectivists, I guess, but you know, they like the philosophy, they agree with it, but it's not what their life is centered around. And you can find plenty of people in this culture who sort of implicitly have the same ideas as objectivism. They just don't have the label for it. They're not philosophically minded. And you know, for those people, I don't think it makes sense to, you know, just troll Ocon for dates.
If you're trolling Ocon for dates, you're scraping the barrel of the bottom of the barrel anyway, aren't you? There aren't many attractive women at Ocon.
There are a lot of gays, though.
That's true. Elliot, you would probably really, really enjoy Ocon.
So I hear. Well, next year, maybe.
Yeah, Seattle? Really? Bellevue? Really?
It's going to be Seattle?
Yeah.
Forget it.
Oh, my God, no. Bellevue's not even Seattle.
Yeah, it's like Seattle worse.
Ugh.
The thing I said about that was they're having it in Bellevue because all of the objectivists are nuts.
Why don't they have it? Come to Orlando. You would love.
Speaking of objectivism, we have our final Reddit here. Are you ready?
Ready.
This is perhaps the most ridiculous one of all. Ayn Rand is banned from r/philosophy. That's their subreddit, r/philosophy. So there's this guy, I think his Reddit name is James Shrugged. It may not have been him, but that's the guy who's all over our objectivism. And he posted this thread that has over 300 replies to it. And apparently he tried to post something about Ayn Rand in this, the philosophy sub. And when he did, he was replied to by an editor who said, she is not a philosopher because she is a novelist or she is a writer. And then he asked for further explanation and they basically called him an idiot. What do you guys think of this? Is he an idiot or is the leader, the editor of Our Philosophy an idiot? Because he tried to reply with all sorts of like, look at the Stanford Encyclopedia defines her as a philosopher.
She viewed herself as a novelist primarily anyway.
I mean, right, she said the purpose of being a philosopher was to be a better novelist.
Yeah, so, I mean, the guy is not wrong factually because that's not how she saw herself, but she was a philosopher. I mean, objectivism is a philosophy and a very prominent one, one that's becoming much more relevant, especially nowadays in this day and age. And I think that to exclude her, to ban her from that page is, or from that subreddit is wrong because she is a philosopher, but I don't think that was ever her primary goal. Now, if somebody tries to ban her from like a novelist or a subreddit, then I think then that'd be really outrageous because she is a novelist. That's an objective truth. But you know, the philosophy one, I mean, I think it's stupid that they ban her. I think that ultimately, you know, so what? They don't need her. They don't need you. They don't need her.
Hey guys.
Yeah.
Want to know what's number 15 on Our Philosophy right now?
Kant?
What's?
Greg Salmieri discusses Ayn Rand's moral philosophy. Podcast episode 73.
On Our Philosophy?
Yep.
So apparently they haven't banned Ayn Rand from Our Philosophy, or do they just not know who he is?
Well, there aren't any episodes on 20, so maybe the mod hasn't seen it yet to delete it.
Really?
Hmm.
I'm kind of offended on that on two levels. One, that they're inconsistently applying their standard, and two, that it's Greg Salmieri is that high on Reddit. Fuck that. Not that I'm personally attacking anyone here in the middle. I just caused a controversy, I think.
You have to explain Greg Salmieri to me.
We will do that off air, Elliot. That's a personal thing. We'll do that off air, but that's very surprising. So there's all this kerfuffle and then they're not even applying it in a way that's consistent, which I suppose isn't a surprise. A non-objectivist applying things inconsistently.
Yeah. Maybe they got some pushback. Who knows?
They may have gotten pushback. Yeah. I mean, the other possibility is what the guy posted was Rand's Playboy interview. Right. I mean, it's not philosophy, but I can kind of get it if the sub, and I'm not familiar with the sub. I was trying to look through it and get a feel for it, and it, like many things on Reddit, is kind of all over the place. You know, it's everything from the morality of eating meat, eggs, and dairy to the failure of atheoscientism and materialism, rational choice, core concepts of philosophy, all kinds of stuff. So I could see how that particular bit by Ayn Rand might not be like the best material to put on the sub, but if I were a mod, I would probably just leave it alone. But maybe they have a history of like Ayn Rand arguments blowing up. I mean, there are a lot of, so what's interesting is I searched for philosophy on Reddit because I was curious to see if there are multiple subs dedicated to philosophy and if for some reason Our Philosophy was somehow more limited, like it's only academics or something like that. But it's the only one. So theoretically, that's where all the philosophy is happening on Reddit. But then I searched for Ayn Rand, and there are a ton of subs, including some that are restricted, which usually means, you know, the goal will be higher quality conversation. So either all people who are against Ayn Rand or all people who are in favor of Ayn Rand. So I think Ayn Rand's doing okay, you know?
Well, yeah, and I mean, if you read the thread, they did raise some valid points about the problem with objectivists. And what they were saying in the thread is maybe she's banned from our philosophy because anytime you say anything anti-Ayn Rand or anti-objectivist, you get those objectivists who just come in and shout you down over and over again and don't actually discuss the ideas. They just repeat things. You know, the, as I call them, the catchphrase objectivists. Yeah. So maybe that's what they were trying to combat against, is they didn't want it to turn into that. Because Katrina and I, we had this conversation the other day. Something like the Playboy interview, and we didn't talk about the Playboy interview specifically, but this is a manifestation of what we were talking about. Something like the Playboy interview is, you're really only going to understand that if you have an in-depth understanding of history and philosophy, because in that's the thing where Rand states her conclusions. And if you know what her premises are and her information is, you can see how she got there. But if you don't, you end up just reading the conclusions, not her entire argument. So on one hand, you can see why people who don't think she's a philosopher would say that's evidence of her not being a philosopher, because she's just saying conclusions, not arguments. And on the other hand, it's dangerous because catchphrase objectivists are just going to take that and rally around it without engaging in any sort of argument. So if you're having an R philosophy sub here, you're not actually achieving anything philosophical, any sort of discussion or arguments in the philosophical sense, if you're putting that sort of article on there.
So once again, the problem's not objectivism, it's objectivists.
Yes, thank you. Yes. Again, I think we should just end on that because there's no better way of saying it.
Yeah.
All right. So let's put a bow on this episode. That's right, RJD. Try to use my line on your podcast. What did we learn this week? Elliot?
I learned that if I have contradictory ideas to the status quo, I could be termed mentally ill. And a judge can order me to get psychologically evaluated.
Yeah, it's funny for you, Elliot. Things have kind of turned 180 for you. It used to be you could be called psychologically ill because you're gay. And now it's you can be psychologically ill called psychologically ill because you're for freedom, because you're a libertarian. So I love how it's gone 180 for you.
True.
Katrina?
I learned that if I want to be a feminist hero, all I have to do is assert that I'm a feminist hero and then be terrible at my job.
Woo. Shots fired. Shots fired.
It's pretty true, though, right? I mean, that's one of the things I follow the Meninist account on Twitter. And one of the things I love that they point out is they put, like, pictures of feminists on there. And they're like, yep, this is exactly what I thought a feminist would look like. It's one of those things that nobody wants to talk about. Do they actually do anything, and are they attractive? Where are the attractive feminists? Where are they?
Yeah, well, one of them's old now. She's the only one I can think of.
What did you learn, Justin?
I learned that I have every right, and I should. Not only do I have a right, but I should not talk to women and not date women who do not like Zack Snyder movies. So I will be reinstituting or creating the sucker punch test. After a certain number of dates or whatever, or a certain number of hours or however I want to define it, you will watch Sucker Punch with me. And if you hate it, get the fuck out of here. And if you love Sucker Punch, if you love the podcast, why don't you tell us about it on iTunes and tell us what your standard is? Is it Firefly? Is it Zack Snyder movies? What is your standard for saying, get out of here, I'm not going to date you anymore? We want to know, as ridiculous as possible, what it is. That's all I've got for shilling this week. We really need Daniel back for that. So
nobody can shill like Daniel.
That's true. He will be back next episode, and we'll be doing a couple with him. And actually, appropriately, the Sucker Punch edition of the Snyder series is coming in August. Be on the lookout for that.
Ooh.
I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
Eyelashes everywhere.
Eyelashes and abs. That's Zack Snyder in a nutshell.
I was gonna say it differently, but okay, fine. Speaking of word games,